Medinsky, who is the Russian negotiator in Istanbul, has come out and talked about a, I think it was a comment made by Yermak, who said to Medinsky, you guys have it easy. You only have one boss. We have three. And first of all, that statement alone makes it clear that Ukraine is not a sovereign state. So we need to stop speaking about a sovereign Ukraine. And therefore, that exposes everything the United States, Keith Kellogg, Trump, the Europeans, NATO is doing as a fraud, because they keep postulating as if Ukraine is a sovereign state capable of making sovereign decisions. Ukraine is not. I did a documentary coming up on 3 years now ago, Agent Zelensky, where I outlined the case that Zelensky was a construct of British intelligence. And he is. I mean, we saw that when he went to Istanbul, how quickly the British dispatched Mr. Powell to be his babysitter, because Zelensky can't be trusted to engage in negotiations without a British handler there to monitor what comes to him and what he says. But the United States is also, the one. Keith Kellogg says the three players are going to come in. I thought Trump was just a guy who was interested in peace. Why, now he's a player? That means that there's American interests here, not just Ukrainian and Russian interests. This isn't about melding the two term sheets together. It's about the United States dictating an outcome that's beneficial solely to the United States. There is no Ukrainian position. People need to understand that right now. There's no such thing as a Ukrainian position. There's a NATO position that's parroted by Ukraine, and the United States has played one of these passive roles where they pretend to be sympathetic to Russia. But at the end of the day, they're always gravitating towards the NATO slash Ukrainian position. Russia has been consistent from day one. I don't know why Keith Kellogg is confused. I don't know why Donald Trump's confused. I mean, Steve Witkoff has been accurate in portraying the Russian position that has been relayed to him from the very beginning of the U.S.-Russian dialogue. Trump himself got off the phone with Putin, where I think Putin made it pretty clear what the Russian objectives were and how Russia sought to get there and what the Russian conditions are. None of this should take anybody by surprise. Trump, I think, lives in a fantasy world where he believes that he has far more leverage over Russia than he does. I mean, we know that this fantasy is fed by people like Scott Bessent, his Secretary of Treasury, who has said, even before he became the Secretary of Treasury, that we know the secret of Russia, and the Russians know that we know the secret, and we can break them at any time. There is no secret to Russia. Russia's kicking America's butt. They're kicking NATO's butt. They're kicking Europe's butt. They know the secret of the West, the collective West, and they've solved it a long time ago. It doesn't mean that things are easy for the Russians. None of this has been easy. It's been very bloody. They've suffered numerous casualties. And they have, had to undertake dramatic systemic changes in how they operate to overcome sanctions. But, when the sanctions came in, instead of having an economy that went into recession, there was reduced growth, but it stabilized at around 2.2%. Today, it's up to 4.8 and growing. How do you do that? How do you strangle the Russian economy and have it grow? Meanwhile, the countries doing the strangling are seeing their company. Germany's economy is on the verge of collapse. There was just a report today about how bad things are going for the Germans. None of the European economies are doing well. And every time they sanction Russia, it gets worse. This is why Vladimir Putin, who's normally very diplomatic in his use of language, said in a contest of idiots, the European Union comes in second. They're not even good enough to come in first. That's how bad they are. And it's true. Trump, I'm confused sometimes by him because, he has to be better briefed. To give you an example of the stupidity of Donald Trump, and I'm trying to be nice here. I apologize for using that term because I don't want you to get in trouble with your YouTube community. But you can't say that Trump is behaving in an intelligent fashion here. When he does a spontaneous press conference where he calls Vladimir Putin crazy, I don't know what's going through his mind, I don't know what's going on and on and on and on and on. And then the reporter asks a follow-on question. You are aware that you know, the Ukrainians tried to assassinate Putin. Well, I didn't know that happened. I guess that might have had an impact. No kidding, Mr. President. You who have promised to wipe a certain unnamed nation off the earth if an assassination attempt came in your way. I'm talking about Iran, Mr. Marandi, but I'm not accusing Iran. I'm saying that the president has thrown out those accusations. He says, I would respond drastically. We would annihilate them. We would wipe them out. All right. If that non-existent event causes that kind of emotion, what would you do if you had 500 drones swarm the presidential helicopter trying to kill Vladimir Putin while he was on Russian soil? And the answer is, you take out the people that attacked you. But in addition to that, over a course of a couple of days, the Ukrainians launched over 2,000 drones into Russia, 50% of whom were targeted civilian targets, not military targets, civilian targets. What is Russia supposed to do in a situation like that? Russia has responded with overwhelming force against exclusively military targets to the extent that there is civilian damage in Ukraine. It's because Ukrainians have yet to master how to use air defense systems. You know, there's things they have to do to avoid being suppressed by the Russians, which means that they're firing without adequate radar control. So the missiles go dumb and they hit civilian infrastructure. It's exclusively Ukrainian air defense is doing damage to civilian targets. Everybody knows it. The Ukrainians know it. We know it. Everybody knows it. And the last thing I'll say on this is the hypocrisy of Donald Trump, or the stupidity of Donald Trump, is manifest when he claims that America is just sitting there. We don't have any vested interest. Who the hell targeted those drones, Mr. President? Who targeted those drones? Why are you flying U.S. Navy intelligence collection platforms off the Russian coast in the Black Sea? Why? If you're this neutral player, why are aircraft, American aircraft, flying into Poland loaded with military equipment? Because you're not an innocent observer. You're an active participant disguised. You are a wolf in sheep's clothing. And that's the role the United States is playing. Either the president is truly one of the dumbest men in the world, or he's one of the most disingenuous men in the world, or he's both.
Professor Marandi, your take on the situation in Ukraine?
I think the Trump interview was very important, and for the reasons that Scott mentioned. But also, I think it reflects on Trump in general, and that he is either not being briefed on key issues, or that he and they're hiding important truths from Trump so that they can manage him and push him in a particular direction, or that he is not interested in being briefed, or a combination of both. I'm sure the first part is true. I'm sure that he is being misled. In fact, the point that Scott made about an assassination back when he was the candidate, and where they claimed that Iran was trying to assassinate him, it was clear that the assassination was, the two assassinations that we know of, were being carried out by Trump's opponents inside the United States. But they were able to manipulate him, or he was just so immoral that he, for whatever reason, was trying to pin the blame on Iran. But the problem that this creates is that it makes Trump completely unreliable. This notion of strategic uncertainty that Trump speaks about, that's not how the rest of the world sees it, or at least that's not how Iranians see it. They just see this as chaos. They see it as untrustworthiness. One day Trump will say one thing, he'll threaten Iran. The next day he'll say that I want to be great friends, and all my only problem is that we don't want them to have a nuclear weapon. Then the next day, they move the goalposts and say that they can't have enrichment, which is a sovereign right of Iran. What Iranians are witnessing, and it's very interesting, by the way, and I'm not saying that they will not be able to manipulate the markets in Iran in the future, but it's interesting that how, when Trump first came to power, he every time he said something, it was having a significant impact on Iranian markets. And then gradually that impact declined. And so more recently, when he'd say some outrageous things, either way, positive or minus or negative, like he'd said that, you know, things he recently seemed to be implying that great progress has been made at the nuclear negotiations, didn't have much of an impact on the Iranian market. When he would say that, you know, the opposite more recently, didn't have much of an impact on the market. It sort of shows that people don't take him seriously. And that is, of course, a dangerous thing in itself, because then if a person is not taken seriously, and at some point he wants to be taken serious, whether it's with regards to China or Iran or Russia or internal opponents, then that could create a new host of problems and dangers. So I thought that interview was very revealing. And it also, I think, says a lot about how dangerous the situation could be in the White House for the future of humanity. When Trump does not know, and it seemed that he really didn't know. It seemed like it was spontaneous. When he didn't know that Russia was heavily bombed with up to 2,000 drones, or was in the process of being bombed, and that President Putin's life was potentially at risk. But at the same time, as Scott alluded to, the Americans are deeply involved in targeting. I'm not saying all the strikes and all the drones and all the missiles that are fired are necessarily linked to the United States. But what if people in Moscow believe that the drones that were fired in the direction of President Putin's helicopter were being guided by the Americans? And what if a drone did strike the helicopter? And what if he did get killed? And then senior officials in Moscow would say, well, this American drone is flying over the Red Sea. They're the ones who are guarding. What would happen? What would happen as a result? And the same is true with Iran. If the Israeli regime carries out some sort of strike on Iran, we know that they can't carry out an effective strike without the Americans. They need the Americans they need the radar stations in Turkey and in the Persian Gulf, which shows how sovereign Turkey and the Persian Gulf regimes are. But anyway, they also need the Americans to refuel their jets. They are completely dependent on the Americans. Now, forget the fact that they need American ammunition and missiles and funding and that aside. But in order to carry out the operation, they need the Americans. So what if, last time wasn't very successful, what if they strike a senior official? What if someone who is very important in Iran is killed or martyred? Then the Iranians blame the Americans for it, because they'll say, well, the Americans were part of this operation. So it seems to me that Trump is not in control. He's not informed. He is sort of indifferent about the dangers of being ill-informed. And he doesn't question why he isn't being informed. Otherwise, if I was Trump and I had not known that a major attack was being carried out on Russian soil, or had been carried out, and that the president of Russia had been threatened, at least there was a minimal threat to his life. If I hadn't been told this, I would have been firing people, all the people involved, on that very same day. So it says a lot about how bad the situation is in Washington, how bad it is in the White House. I'm pretty sure that this has been the case in the past too, with previous presidents, that the deep state, they control what sort of information comes in. But I think in the case of Trump, his lack of interest and his general ignorance is making it even more dangerous.
Scott, the point that Professor Morandi mentioned, I think, is so much important in terms of who's running the show in Ukraine. Because if they could get something with Vladimir, they could hit Vladimir Putin and his team. That could bring some sort of turmoil, international turmoil, to what's going on in Ukraine. Who has the responsibility for the behavior of Ukrainians? Is Europe, Germany, United Kingdom, and France? Or we can link them to the people within the Trump administration. I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I cannot imagine that he knew about it. But some people within the Trump administration.
Let's just start off by stating something that everybody should know is true, but I think we've forgotten about it. The CIA built 20 bases inside Ukraine for the sole purpose of carrying out covert operations targeting Russia. These bases cover a variety of tasks. We know that the CIA, you know, has integrated Ukraine's covert and overt military capabilities into a strategic objective, which still is viable, valid. Trump has not backed away from or reversed course on the strategic objective of the United States to strategically defeat Russia and Ukraine. And that is also the European and NATO objectives. These have not been reversed. It is still American policy until the president directs otherwise. And the CIA, once given an objective, they don't stop. The connectivity that exists, exists on a number of levels. The CIA is an organization that just specializes in lying to everybody, including themselves. And if you have CIA case officers whose task is to facilitate the effective use of drones against Russian targets, they're going to continue to do that job. And they are continuing to do that job together with their NATO. We know that NATO technicians are working with the Ukrainians to develop their drones because the Ukrainians have been stupid on their social media to post photographs of people working, and they're going, well, they ain't Ukrainian. We know who they are. They're European. And they're right there next to their Ukrainian counterpart, holding up a guidance system and all this stuff. The attacks against Russia are very sophisticated in terms of applying technology designed to defeat Russian air defense systems. First of all, the drones themselves are constructed of materials that are designed to make them radar resistant. They fly at speeds that are designed to, I'm not going to bore people, but radars have certain sweep. They're looking for things moving at certain paces. And if you have a system that's doesn't reflect and is flying at a given speed, you can make it look like a flock of birds, for instance, if it's flying at the speed of a flock of birds, as opposed to faster. The radar systems are tuned to do things. I'm saying it's a very sophisticated approach using, it's not your beautiful stealth drones put together by Americans. They look pretty unsophisticated, but they're designed to penetrate Russian air defense. And they do so by exploiting seams in the Russian air defense. I don't know what the frequency of Russia's shuffling the deck is. I know, as somebody who has, planned and participated in sophisticated warfare, that, we just don't leave our air defense system sitting in one place so that the enemy can say, oh, there's the umbrella. We move them around consistently so that we have different umbrellas that make it difficult for people to plan attacks, because the attacks are designed to split the seams of air defense. And if you take a look at the drone flights, the way they fly into Russia, they fly at specific altitudes, they fly in specific directions, they change altitudes as they go, flying slow with radar absorbed material. This is a very sophisticated attack, and it's also designed to come in waves. Again, I won't get into the planning details of why you do that. The Iranians know, because they hit the Israelis with waves, so they understand the benefit of saturation, and then you know, rebound time. And if you come in, you can hit a number of gaps at the same time and exploit them. This is what the Ukrainians are doing. This is beyond the capability of Ukraine. This is stuff that's brought into Ukraine, and the Ukrainians are schooled on this and are executed. So it's a Western attack against Ukraine. I don't think the United States has an overt role in this. We've tried to pull back, but the CIA is there. I can guarantee you there's CIA fingerprints all over this, because that's what they do. And the CIA never stops. They never stop. They don't take orders from the United States president. They take the initial order from the United States president, but then the CIA goes off and they do what they do. Look at Iraq. There was a period of time when the CIA was working with the Kurds in the north to try and, you know, foment problems, to create issues. And around 1993, 94, there was a CIA operative, Bob Baer, who was there, and he had received, he thought his instructions were to use the Kurds to create instability for Saddam, and he received word from the, I guess it was the PUK, that the Talibanese people, that the Iranians wanted to help, and he was, told, you can't meet with the Iranians and stand down. And Bobby Baer didn't stand down. Now, he has his version of events, but the bottom line is, the Kurds launched an attack against the Iraqis, expecting America to be there for them, and we weren't, because the CIA lied to them, promised support that didn't manifest itself, because the CIA could never hit the off button. And right now in Iraq, we had 20 CIA bases doing weird stuff, unconventional warfare, guerrilla warfare, drone warfare, electronic warfare, running covert agents, planting caches inside Russia of explosives that would be drawn upon by Ukrainian assets to blow things up. CIA does it all, baby. And that's what they did. And that's what they're doing. And they're deeply involved. The president may not know about this because, to be honest, the director of the CIA may not know about it. And Tulsi Gabbard certainly doesn't know about it. The man running Russia House may have an inkling of it, but the bottom line is there's some senior case officers down there saying, don't worry about it, boss. We got it under control. And they just keep going. Look, the CIA trains its case officers to lie to the polygraph. Their own polygraph, the one that's supposed to check whether or not they're alcoholics, wife beaters, traitors, and all this. The polygrapher knows. They're like, you ready? And they do the polygraph, and they select, because they're all liars, because they're all drunks. They all cheat on their expense reports. They're not good people. We call these case officers American heroes. No, they're not. They're criminals and they're thugs who are running covert operations without the consent of their government. And in this case, these are covert operations which put the life of the Russian president at risk. Now, I don't know how Russia operates, but I can guarantee you this. A foreign power kills the American president, and we are in an existential phase of our interaction with the world. There's a reason why we have nuclear weapons. And one of the reasons is you don't get to kill our president. No one. I'm not making a threat against any nation. I'm just stating a statement of fact. You kill the American president, your nation ceases to exist. In fact, many nations will cease to exist because we will make assumptions that all of our potential enemies are involved. We assume that if you're killing our president, you're trying to decapitate the leadership to destroy the country. Well, gosh, if we feel that way, how do you think the Russians feel? How do you think the Iranians feel? I think Professor Mirande is a lot less aggressive than I am, but I think he was saying the same thing, that if you attack Iran and kill a senior Iranian leader, the Iranians have a right to assume that that wasn't an accident and that there's intent behind that action. The intent is not necessarily to allow Iran to thrive as a nation state, but the opposite, and Iran will respond accordingly, as they should, as any nation should, if another nation carries out decapitation of the senior executive. But no, the United States is involved in everything that's happening in Ukraine, because as I said early on, Medinsky, Yermak told this to Medinsky, there's three bosses. Ukraine's not a sovereign state. These actions by Ukraine against Russia are not the actions of Ukrainian sovereignty. They're the actions of Ukraine being a proxy of its true masters who reside in Brussels, in the Washington, D.C., in the various capital cities, especially London. London is extremely influential on what the Ukrainians are doing.
Professor Morandi, what Scott mentioned is about the role of CIA and the security of that region. We know that Iran, together with UAE and North Korea and Russia, will attend a high-level security and intelligence briefing in Moscow, which will be attended by Putin's top secret aide. What is the main concern of these countries gathering, coming together to talk about their security?
I don't know the details about this, and I've just read this online, so we'll have to wait and see. But one thing that I'd like to add to what Scott was saying, and maybe that would be indirectly related to the question, is that the Iranians know how the Americans work very well. In some ways, I can argue probably better than any other country in the world. And the reason is that the Americans had two long-standing occupations, and they still do to a degree in Iraq, that are on both sides of Iran. The Americans occupied Afghanistan for two decades, and Iraq, of course, in a way still continues. And so ever since the Americans entered this country, the Iranians began to counter the Americans in their own way. The Taliban, without Iran, would not have been able to expel the Americans. Iran has deep differences with the Taliban. They're very hostile towards women. They don't let them go to school. There are many differences that Iran has with them. But for the Iranians, they're still indigenous. And the American threat was always paramount. So Iran knew how embassies worked. And to be very blunt, the Americans were very corrupt. I mean, I'm not involved in these things, but I do meet people in different circles, and I have over the years, how easy it was for the Iranians to purchase helicopter engines at a very cheap price from American bases in Afghanistan, or how the Iranians could get all sorts of intelligence from American diplomats and others over coffee, not through their own people, but through Iraqis in Baghdad. So you had this huge American presence, the CIA, the military, the diplomats, and it's very corrupt, and the most corrupt of them all is U.S. intelligence. And this is extremely dangerous under normal circumstances for any government. And to a degree, I have to point out that intelligence agencies are the most difficult to manage by any country, because in order to protect the country's intelligence, they are in small cells. They are separated from one another. Inside intelligence agencies, the different groups don't know much about one another, because if someone, let's say if some American CIA agent defected to Iran or to Russia or to China or to India or to anyone else, then they would be able to expose all sorts of information about different parts of their organization, and that would be catastrophic. So what intelligence agencies do is they try to compartmentalize the different parts. They try to keep the different people and different groups separate from one another. So if something does happen, or if someone is arrested or captured, if someone defects, the damage done to that agency is minimal. But that makes it difficult to control what goes on in an agency, because even the person who's the head of the agency doesn't necessarily know what's going on beneath him. So that is an issue that all major intelligence agencies have, and a problem. So there's always this possibility that people go rogue, and we've had that in Iran before, by the way, where agents have gone rogue. But in this case, you have the CIA, which is very corrupt. I mean, Iranian intelligence agencies, I think, I would argue, are pretty clean. But the CIA, because of its very long history and its global interference and the sheer amount of money that goes into the agency, and of course, how it made money through the drug trade, whether in Vietnam or in Latin America or in Afghanistan, very corrupt. Now, you have a president, any U.S. president has to control the CIA. I think it's impossible to control it because of the nature of the CIA. But in the case of Trump, someone who doesn't even know what we know from the internet about a major strike on Russia, which is one of his most three important foreign policy issues, and he doesn't know that President Putin's helicopter was at risk, I think such a president has no clue about what the CIA is doing. And so I would imagine that in any engagement between Iran, Russia, and others, North Koreans, the Chinese, anyone, the Emirates, I don't know exactly why the Emirates would be in such a meeting with the North Koreans and Iranians. I have no idea. And I don't know. That's why I'm curious to know if this is really true or not. But I doubt it, but I may be wrong. So it may turn out to be something that's really happening. But the point is that in any meeting I would imagine between serious agencies, one of the key questions is, what is the CIA doing? And do the people at the top know that this is happening? And again, this goes back to what we were discussing earlier. This just makes the global situation all the more dangerous. Because if this is not US policy, because we all assume, I mean, I would assume that every major event that takes place in my part of the world, or in Eastern Europe, or in the South China Sea, is based upon a policy that is approved by the US president. But what if things are happening, important things are happening, that are not approved by the US president? And the United States is the global hegemon. It has, 700, 800 bases across the world. And so you have all these agencies, all these, the CIA, among others, involved everywhere. It's not like Iran is a major power. Iran is the most important power, I would argue, in West Asia. But Iran's realm of influence is West Asia. The U.S. president, even if he's a brilliant genius, controlling this empire is I think impossible, and that's why it's been declining so fast. But the point is that it makes this all the more dangerous, because everyone would assume that the U.S. government is intentionally being provocative or carrying out a particular policy, and it may be that Trump or the president doesn't know. Let me give you an example. During Trump's first presidency, the U.S. flew a drone over Iranian airspace, and the Iranians brought it down. Back then, it was my assumption that Trump knew about this, that this they were intentionally being provocative. They had a policy to do this, to probe Iranian air defenses. Now, when I think about it, I don't know. Maybe he had no idea that this was being done. Maybe the head of CENTCOM was doing it without authorization. Maybe someone, in the CIA was pushing for this sort of operation. The Iranians, of course, reacted because it flew over their airspace. They brought it down. And so if it could have led to a war. But we don't know. Did Trump know what was happening, or was this just the system doing what it does? So the CIA is, I believe, the most dangerous organization on this planet, which could lead to the world to a third world war, simply because it is answerable to no one, and its funding is endless.